Explain your work again, because there you were, elbows in grease in the ground, and as an engineer, what are you doing?
Well, you do everything from designing facilities to the cost estimates to the construction, and I had a number of projects. We built an additional higher capacity 16-mile pipeline, so I had it in Artesia, and then built a number of tank batteries and connected to them units that measure the crude oil. Did kind of a diagnostic of crude losses, why you're losing crude oil, and you find producers have very creative ways of shorting you on the tank batteries. And so, no, just a wide variety of things. And I had, during that period of time, I met a guy that was a Schlumberger engineer, and I started going out on well locations with him at night. I said, I'd like to learn a little bit about the downhole part of this stuff. And that's one of the things that really served me well in my training review. Because typically you'd go into one of your training reviews and one guy liked to sit right behind you and ping questions off the back of your head. But it would be anywhere from 2 or 3 to 4 or 5 people asking questions just continually. And I knew as they started down that, there was far more experience in everything we did in our jobs represented in that room than I had. So you started at a disadvantage, a knowledge disadvantage. Well, for some reason, we got off talking about downhole stuff that I'd learned. I'd mentioned that I'd gone out on the wells with this guy. And they said, well, tell us about that. Well, I spent 2.5 hours telling him about it because I realized I knew more about it than anybody else in the room.
You had been there.
Because I'd been doing it,
right.
and that wasn't something they'd done, and so that served me pretty well. But it was interesting dynamic, but that culture of being demanding, trying to get everyone to produce the most they could produce, the most they were capable of producing, was one that I think was a very good culture, and it's one that served not just Conoco well, but it served the whole industry well. We were one of the few companies, because at one point I did the engineering recruiting, we were one of the few companies that when we handed out a brochure of our successful recruits that had gone on to success, we had 6 of them that were senior officers in other companies, not Conoco.
Mm-hmm. Then you're staying with Conoco till... I mean, you have various jobs. I have them listed: staff engineer, senior staff engineer, district manager. So then they started putting you in a managerial level,
yes.
Apparently. They saw that in you, which bore well, of course, that later on, a manager of research and development, manager of engineering, manager of Eastern operations. So each time, and that was all with Conoco.
Yes. And I was fortunate. I, after a rocky start, I ended up in most of those jobs. I was the youngest person at that point in time to have held that job. And so it did, I think the rocky start kind of woke me up that, you just can't mail things in. You have to really dig in and do what you need to do. And
so you were working harder, you think, and longer than most people?
Didn't work longer because there was a little bit of a culture when you were in the general office. People were sort of expected to show up Saturday morning and be there all Saturday morning. And I went down for one of them, and everybody sat around and read the Oil and Gas Journal. They weren't doing much. And so I said, I've got a young family by this time. I'm not going to do that. And I said, I spend a lot of time at the office. I travel a fair amount. And with a young family, I'm going to carve the weekend out, and I'm just not going to, unless it's absolutely necessary, I'm not going to be killing time at the office just because it's culturally sort of expected. And that didn't, in the end of the day, hurt me.
Okay. All right, so you're there till 1973. And then we're going to jump to Williams. What happened in 73? Connect us to Williams.
Well, there were a couple of things. I had come to represent my boss who'd caught a case of the Asian flu. And there was a very robust pipeliners club in Tulsa, and the presidents of the various pipelines were the board of directors. And so I pinch hit for Nick. And Gus McKilla, who was president of Williams Pipeline at the time, called me after that meeting and said, we'd like to talk to you about a job. And I thanked him, but said that I really wasn't interested. I was doing well at Conoco, and I was prepared to stay. And I barely hung up the phone when Nixon, President Nixon, announced wage and price controls. And at that point, the only way you could get a raise was by changing jobs. You could not get an in-place raise. And they were very rigidly enforced.
And why were they enforced? Why were they instituted in the first place?
Because his economic advisor said inflation had reached 5%, and that was unsustainable, and they needed to cool the economy. And that, so at the point I was probably making, I'd done very well at Conoco, so I was making somewhere in the mid-20s, 20,000, 23,000 maybe. But had by this time four children. Two were in school, and the others were on the doorstep of going into school. And Houston was going to be, Conoco had announced that they were moving the pipeline to Houston out to Greenway Plaza. And that was going to be a challenge because Houston school systems were not good. And in order to go to the communities that had better school systems, you were going to be in a cost of living that was beyond our means. And so we knew it was going to be challenging, but moving to Tulsa, well, Gus called and said, well, there's a meeting in Dallas. Why don't you have dinner with us? And so I did.
In Dallas, with Williams people or no?
Well, yes, it was an American Petroleum Institute meeting.
Oh.
And so a lot of the pipeline people were going to be there. And so I had dinner with Gus and the other members of the executive team and liked them and enjoyed them. And by this time, I talked to Pat and I said, well, one thing after all these moves, you won't have to move to Ponca City again because, you know, every time you had a baby. So she would barely go visit now. But it would be some stability, and we didn't know much about Tulsa at the time. Other than I'd drive into the airport from the northwest and drive back that way. Mm-hmm. And so we came over, and I said, yeah, well, I'd really like to come to work.
So was that a big wage increase?
It was a wage increase. I think I got up to like $27,000 or $28,000, but I also had a company vehicle.
Okay.
And my company vehicle, as it turned out, my mother had entered my brother when he was in college. He was a collegiate golfer. When he was in college, she'd entered him in a sweepstakes that Golf Digest had. And he wins a fancy Mercedes. Of course, I pointed out to my mother that he's still in college. Your other son has four children. Could really have used a nice Mercedes, and we're the ones that gave him the subscription. But he couldn't afford it. He couldn't afford the insurance on it. So my dad took it and bought him an AMC Hornet. And so I ended up, my first company car, Bill needed to get he was getting married, so he needed a little bit more substantial car. So he had a job now and could get one. And I said, well, I'll buy the Hornet. So I think I gave him $1,500 for the Hornet, and that was my company car.
Yeah.
So it was a deal. But the challenge, as it turned out, was Gus said, great, well, we want you to come to work, but you have to go out to TU and you have to have psychological testing. And I said, okay. And so I go out, and I don't even remember the faculty member's name, but he did the whole Rorschach and variety of things, and then he did a self-assessment. And at the end of the self-assessment, he said, this is the first time this has ever happened. And I said, well, I'm not going to get this job. And he said, I said, was that bad? And he said, no, actually, it's good. He says, you're the only person I've ever had that I've done this with that agreed exactly, point by point, with my assessment.
I didn't follow.
Well, it was a whole series of where you would rate yourself with regard to all these personality traits.
Okay.
And so he had done an assessment
and then,
that he would turn in, but he also had the person he was working with. And I guess it was for self-awareness or whatever that he was testing there. But he said that's the first time it had ever happened.
All right.
That my assessment and his were identical.
Yep, yep. So you got the job.
I got the job.
But did you, coming to Tulsa and close to Missouri and all that must have been inviting to you, the geography of it.
Well, it certainly the geography was better than Houston.
Yeah.
At the outset, because again, we didn't know a lot about Tulsa. And then we had a friend whose wife had taught here, and she taught in the Jenks school system. She says, now it's really a good school system. You ought to locate where you can have the kids in that system. And I checked it out a little bit, and the principal at the time had a flat top, more white socks, and I said, this is my kind of place. And all of the school was in Jenks, and so that was a much smaller enterprise in those days, but it turned out to be a good choice. And then we really began enjoying Tulsa. And with younger children, a lot of your early activities are revolving around their activities. And then I started getting involved in different community activities, and Pat did as well. And then it just has grown over time. We've been here a long time now.
How old would you have been in 73 when you came here?
Well, that would have made me 31.
Okay.
And I was the only employee at Williams Pipeline that was between the age of 30 and 40.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons they were looking for somebody, because they had automated, and as a unionized group, their mentality was, the people with the least seniority are the ones to go when we eliminate jobs. So they had created this bimodal employee cohort. But there was nobody in that 30 to 40 age range. And so they brought me in to begin trying to build some talent at an age that logically would need to be moving into more senior jobs, and they just didn't have that.
Who was CEO of Williams then? Was that John?
John Williams was the chairman and CEO, and Joe Williams had just come back from, I want to say he was in Iran. Iran. He had just come back from Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Bob Schauer.
Pardon me?
He and Bob Schauer.
Okay.
Bob was chief financial officer. And actually, he's the chief financial officer I ultimately replaced.
We have both their stories on our website, voicesofoklahoma.com, John and Joe.